Hi, I'm David Freudberg from Humankind. Occasionally on this podcast, we present classic programs from our archive, including the one you'll hear now from our series, Kindred Spirits. For that program, we sought out people of many backgrounds, traditions, and life experiences to understand the personal beliefs that give them purpose and animate their activities. If you like what you hear on this podcast, we're asking for your help to keep it going. Please visit humanmedia.org, and at the top of the homepage, click on How You Can Help. Thanks.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh. May the peace and blessings and mercy of Allah be
God,
with you. Allahu Akbar.
Our Father,
who art in heaven,
in te domine speravi, non confundar in aeternum. In you, O Lord, I trust, may I never
Shema
be
Israel,
confounded.
Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad.
Walk cheerfully over the earth, answering that of God in every one.
You're listening to Kindred Spirits.
Welcome to Kindred Spirits. I'm David Freudberg. Our special guest today is James Dillett Freeman. I first met Jim in 1981 at a lovely, peaceful community in Missouri called Unity Village, which is the home of a century-old tradition of spiritual searching in America called simply Unity, which embraces people of all races and religions who wish to unite with God. Jim is a Unity minister. He is vice president of Unity School, which is based at Unity Village, Missouri. He's a well-known poet whose works have had the curious distinction of twice flying to the moon. As we covered on a previous program, Jim found that not one, but two astronauts had, unbeknownst to him at the time, taken his inspiring verses on trips that they made to the moon as a sort of spiritual comfort. Probably the only poet who has that particular distinction. Jim, before we began today's recording, you and I were trying to identify exactly how to introduce you, and realized that there was a central theme that has sort of consumed your whole life. What's that?
Well, all my life I have tried, as I've said, to justify the ways of God to man. I've tried to answer this question. How is it possible for an intelligent human being in our time to believe in a God? He looks at the world and he sees all the things going on in it that go on in it, all kinds of acts of cruelty, not only human, but natural. And he has to wonder. I think almost all intelligent people wonder, is there a God? Is there some sort of a creator and some sort of a ruling force or a ruling person? Because most people, when they think of God, believe in a person. I don't particularly believe that, but is it possible to do this? And for myself, I've struggled with this, I suppose because I've had a lot of doubts, and so I've tried to answer those doubts. And I have written book after book and poem after poem and article after article, stories even, about that, to try to answer that question.
And what have you concluded? Is it possible? You're obviously an intelligent, thinking being. Do you have faith in God?
I'm a believer. I feel, I say in one of these books, in the end, it depends on faith. It is an act of faith. You can decide either way. There are reasons not to believe. All you have to do is look around you. And there are reasons to believe. And you must decide which way you're going to go.
I had a conversation one time in California with a professor of psychology at a university in Los Angeles. And he told me it's his conclusion that man lives in an indifferent universe, and he utterly denies the existence of God. Now, how can we be sure that, in fact, God is not merely the imagining of an emotionally insecure psyche?
As I say, you can't be absolutely sure. In the end, it's a matter of faith. Let me read you something here. I think I can find it. Life leaves the world. Oh, this is it then. Life leaves the world in our hands. We can make it meaningless, a world of chance in which we grind out our purposeless existence. Or a world sparkling with meaning, a world that is a fit habitation for the human mind and the human spirit. You may see reasons to believe, you may see reasons not to believe. Life asks of you an act of faith. You make it what it is to be. And I truly believe that. But I don't believe that human beings, I do believe, human beings can't survive for long in a world that is meaningless. In the first place, man cannot believe, man cannot conceive of a meaningless world. If there is anything that we are the creatures who seek meaning. When I set out to write that book, I was going to call it A Case for Meaning. I have found meaning in many ways. I've found a number of things. In my search for meaning, I've found a number of things about life that I'm absolutely sure of. For instance, that human beings are meant to love one another. And you have to find that. And that human beings cannot be happy. In fact, they're miserable when they don't love one another. And all the strange in this indifferent world you were saying, this psychologist believes in, that if we don't love one another, we're miserable. It would act as if here comes this species, which certainly is at the end of a long, long evolutionary chain, no matter what you think of human beings. A lot of evolution went on to produce it. And yet here's a species that here life, this indifferent life, is trying to produce. And what does it finally produce? Creatures that die if they don't love, and that kill each other if they don't love.
Lack of love, it is lethal.
Oh, completely. It is for children, they say. If a child is brought up without any love, well, he turns into a psychopath, for one thing. But they've proved that in hospitals where children get no love, like in certain orphanages. And I think they've even made an effort to change that for that reason. The child that never gets held, the child that never has anybody show much attention to him, no matter how well fed he is, he dies. We can't live without it. It is strange, then, that this world and this long evolutionary process should end up with that kind of thing. It's a contradiction in terms of itself. I don't believe that. And even that, even take your psychologist in a sense and take the mechanist and the materialist who believes that there's only a law of survival. Isn't it strange that in order to survive, we have to want to live in a way that would indicate we're immortal beings and that there's a lot more to life than you see in the few years and in the sometimes miserable affairs that we make of it here? That's very strange, because I'm willing to accept that law of survival. I don't particularly like it, but I'll accept it because I think it proves that there is meaning. If the human race really comes to feel there is no meaning, it's going to disappear. It will kill itself. It's like...
It will lead to nuclear holocaust.
Of course. What difference does it make? One anthill is no more important than any other anthill. So you blow it up. What have you destroyed? Nothing. A meaningless nothing. But the moment the human being shows up on the scene, there's meaning, you see. He looks and he says, oh, look, a green plant. Look at the leaves changing. Look, there's David. And he has blue eyes or blue-gray eyes, you see, and all those things. Let's assume the materialists are right, and they are to some extent. None of that is here. All you have is a lot of whirling atoms. You don't even have whirling atoms, because I had to say atoms, and I had to make meaning out of this amorphous world. And I can't even say amorphous world. But the moment the human being is there, it finds meaning.
We're talking with James Dillett Freeman. He is an author, a poet, and obviously a live wire, joining us today on Kindred Spirits. Jim comes from Unity Village, which is an ecumenical and very beautiful spiritual community in Missouri.
Shall I read you a couple things just because I like them? The strength of standing still. No one can tell the age of ageless trees, time's rage, and small indignities fall without force on these. Now, those four lines I thought were just ordinary, but the next one's up here. A tree has found out how to stay unmoved, yet bow, and learned, as has a hill, the strength of standing still. The babbling birds and I, with constant shrill outcry, around the round earth dart, hoping to find life's heart, while standing still, a tree is all it has to be. I must have written at least six poems about crocuses, because the editor of Daily Word comes up with crocuses just about every spring. But she called it Dare, and the whole thing's pretty good, but those last four lines say a great truth, and they say something I want to say to human beings. The crocuses have bloomed before it's April here. They will not stay entombed within a winter fear. We put on scarves and boots, or huddle by the fire, and tall trees hug their roots and dare to look no higher. But these, so small and slight, push boldly forth and flower. I think they might, and so they have the power. When winter will not go, but lingers on, shall I, because there may be snow, let spring go by.
I particularly liked your line there. I think they might, and so they have the power.
It's good. I like the last verse because it's smooth. And it says something, because too many people do this. When winter will not go but lingers on, they let the whole spring go, you know. No. So there is snow. It's up to you. In a way, it's like I said in that end of that. It's an act of faith. You can find spring, or you can let it go by. And a lot of people do let it go by. And spring here doesn't mean just a season, but a season in the mind, a season in the spirit. And a lot of us let it go.
How can we open up like those tender crocuses?
Well, there again, I believe that faith in God helps. And to have, I feel that the human being is required really only very little, but some things very much. It helps to have faith in God, that is faith in meaning, faith in a meaningful universe. And to have faith in a meaningful universe, you've got to believe that, as I say, something like love and intelligence created it and governs it. And you have to love one another, or you're going to have a miserable life. And then you have to use your intelligence as well as you can use it.
Your inborn wisdom.
Yeah. We've got it. Here it is. The thing works. We've got to work it. When we don't use that, we're not really human. Human isn't the right word, but we're not the rational species called Homo sapiens, you see. And I want to be a member of that species as well as a loving creature, and as well as a creature with faith.
Jim, do you have low moments, moments of doubt?
Oh, I probably have had all my life, or I wouldn't write four or five books and all kinds of poetry on the theme of how can I believe there is a God, don't you imagine? And I've had a lot of times in my life. My life has not been an easy life, David. It has been for years. But as a child, I had a very unpleasant childhood and adolescence. But I've learned to live. Somewhere along the line, I learned a number of things. I learned that love is life, and hate is death, and fear is death, and faith is life. I learned those, and I learned it out of looking into my own soul, I suppose, and considering life.
What's the nature of that introspection, looking into your own soul, from which all people of faith derive their strength?
Well, everybody looks into his own soul, but sometimes he doesn't look, I suppose, very intelligently. He looks, and what he sees in there is all the dark side of his own nature. But somewhere along the line, I guess I came to the place where I knew, hey, if I'm going to live and be a creative person, I've got to find some kind of meaning in my life. And I've got to put that meaning. To a great extent, we find meaning when we put it into our life. And we put it into our life by action. And I was living a very frustrated life, really. I wasn't producing anything and just struggling over what little I did produce. And then I slowly came to realize, I went through some experiences that were very unhappy ones. And in the process, I came, I guess, to say, hey, either you change or you're going down the chute. I didn't want to go down the chute. So I began to examine my own soul, and I began to be a productive person. I began to write much more. Suddenly poetry began to sprout out of me. Poetry, I guess, has always been my salvation. When I was 10 years old, my family broke up in a horrible way. It would have made Sigmund Freud happy. The result. Perfect, you know, a classic thing. I'm not going to give you any details, but it was a classic catastrophe, family catastrophe. And my mother ran away with another guy and took me with her. And we were 1,500 miles from anybody that I knew. And we lived in a ghastly slum. And he was drunk most of the time. And I began to write poetry.
As your escape.
Yeah, undoubtedly. And then I didn't write it for a while. And then I began to write it again, very voluminously, pouring out of me. And then again, I went through a long period when somehow I had lost faith in myself and in the world. I was just soured. And then, of course, I found unity and was with people who were awfully good, kind, decent people.
That's important, isn't it, in one search?
It sure helps. You've got to, I almost feel you've got to come across some people who will support you.
God will provide those, won't he?
Well, I think he does if you search for them. Yes. You've got to look for them. Because a lot of people, of course, never find them. If they don't, they're destroyed, in a sense. Sad, but a lot of people do go down the chute.
It's not unlike the little child in the orphanage who needs to be hugged.
Yeah, right. And I really believe if you look for it, you're going to find somebody, yes. But, of course, you can close the doors.
And even, I find, perhaps beyond the most inspirational person falling in your lap at a given moment, just by looking clearly for some meaning, for some inspiration, for some clarity, at virtually any experience, it's contained within that experience. A friend of mine said a couple of years ago, I remember this reverberating in my heart for a long time, some of the least likely people are your spiritual teachers. Somebody will say something offhandedly, not really knowing where it came from or what it meant, but it will have a hidden significance for you. And such people are very helpful. So really, God's lessons abound.
Oh, I'm certain that God is speaking. The truth is being stated every moment of existence. But we don't hear it. I am certain. It has to be. Otherwise, the thing doesn't have meaning. If that flower can't somehow comprehend a truth, then the thing doesn't have... It's got to remember, if there is meaning, there's meaning for that flower. There's nothing left out. There's absolutely nothing left out. Well, a number of poets have said this, that in the end, I've forgotten Tennyson when he was writing In Memoriam, says something about it, that not one worm is cloven in vain, that somehow it has to make sense for everybody. And I think in one of Dostoevsky's books, Brothers Karamazov, where he says that if heaven is built on the blood of one innocent, God can take his ticket back. And I've always liked that. It can't be, you see. If there is this meaning, it's good, David. It's good beyond all our concepts of goodness. I believe it's there. Hard as it is for me at some times in my life to see it. Because I say, I've had some very painful experiences. You undoubtedly have too. Every human being does. At the level we've come up to, we suffer as well as experience joy. I would like all people to experience joy. I would do my best to help them. And that's another thing, I think. When I was even a kid, I guess after I was 10, now, you know, and I went through a lot of pain, I can remember strongly thinking, God, I want to help human beings. I had this sense of people hurting, a strong sense, I believe I've always had it, a very strong sense of human anguish.
Compassion.
I guess so. I can even remember specifically when I was a little boy, I don't know how old, young teenager, and I was living in Kansas City then, and one time I got on a streetcar, and there was nobody else on the streetcar except a little Negro boy. And we rode along, it was night falling, just falling, and I could see the cars and all, you know, going up and down. And I had that sense of all these human beings, thousands and thousands of human beings that I didn't know, but all going home, going somewhere. And I had this tremendous sense of life. And somehow I had that sense of that, I thought, gosh, what would it be like to be a little Negro boy? And I sat there, maybe he was feeling great, but I had put myself into his place and was feeling his hurt at all the injustices that were going to be heaped on him. And I can remember thinking as I sat in the street, thinking, God, help me to help people not hurt so much. So that was always there. The suffering servant, I guess.
Well, I'm suffering because you're not reading one or two of your verses. Or something from prose. Well, I wonder if you could help me.
Well, let me read this one. This is a piece of verse. This is a piece of verse that a lot of people have liked. It's this poem. It's called Involvement. I wrote it as a little Christmas poem, is all. But Shepherd, shall I tend your sheep? I, who have scant shepherd's skill, but I hear them weep and weep. And if I do not go, who will? The sheep do not belong to me. I am not sure where the sheepfold is. But looking around, I do not see, in a world that is not mine, but his, any to come, save such as I. And so there is nothing else to do. When in the dark, I hear them cry, but look for a light to lead them to.
Do you need me? I am there. You cannot see me, yet I am the light you see by. You cannot hear me, yet I speak through your voice. You cannot feel me, yet I am the power at work in your hands. I am at work, though you do not understand my ways. I am at work, though you do not recognize my works. I am not strange visions. I am not mysteries. Only in absolute stillness, beyond self, can you know me as I am, and then but as a feeling and a faith. Yet I am there, yet I hear, yet I answer. When you need me, I am there. Even if you deny me, I am there. Even when you feel most alone, I am there. Even in your fears, I am there. Even in your pain, I am there. I am there when you pray and when you do not pray. I am in you and you are in me. Only in your mind can you feel separate from me, for only in your mind are the mists of yours and mine. Yet only with your mind can you know me and experience me. Empty your heart of empty fears. When you get yourself out of the way, I am there. You can of yourself do nothing, but I can do all. And I am in all. Though you may not see the good, good is there, for I am there. I am there because I have to be, because I am. Only in me does the world have meaning. Only out of me does the world take form. Only because of me does the world go forward. I am the law on which the movement of the stars and the growth of living cells are founded. I am the love that is the law's fulfilling. I am assurance. I am peace. I am oneness. I am the law that you can live by. I am the love that you can cling to. I am your assurance. I am your peace. I am one with you. I am. Though you fail to find me, I do not fail you. Though your faith in me is unsure, my faith in you never wavers. Because I know you, because I love you, beloved. I am there.
Thank you very much. We've been talking today with James Dillett Freeman. He's a Unity minister and vice president of Unity School at a wondrous place, which I commend to everyone, called Unity Village in Missouri, outside of Kansas City. For Kindred Spirits, I'm David Freudberg.
You've been listening to Kindred Spirits with host David Freudberg, a production of Sound Documentaries. Thanks very much for listening, and may the spirit of unity bring you peace.
To hear more episodes of Humankind, you can subscribe to our free podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or your preferred podcast player. A new episode each week. The podcast title is Humankind on Public Radio. And if you enjoy this program, be sure to leave us a kind review at iTunes and Stitcher. If you want to support the program, please visit humanmedia.org. And at the top of the homepage, click on How You Can Help. Again, our web address is humanmedia.org. Thanks.